unless I think that we can start, I think that the commission will come to approve. No, they have at pump station, they are selling fruits and water. You know what happened at the station. You know what it got.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
What is happening at the station?
A lot of things are being sold.
Like what?
No, it's too much.
The strange small there,
yeah.
At the station. And what? And miniskirt. And miniskirt. You don't want to say it in court.
Right.
Yeah. Let's start. Remember, there is the two presentations. Very detailed presentation. If it's 5 to 12, we are sitting here until 1. Let us investigate. Members, it's very much important. I'm not making a joke when it comes to the budget of the Department of Correctional Services. You know, we are public representatives, and we must interrogate. You know for a fact that the department is for the fifth year, last year, that it qualified for this opinion. From the Auditor General. Now we have asked the department to give us expenditure, and we must ask the department. You see, the CFO raised an issue of I'll just ask. You know, one issue I've mixed up now my business. But members, you are there to interrogate this thing and to ask questions. If we are not satisfied with a program or a project, and we will say to this department to say shift this thing from this amount and not. You know, for instance, the head office. What is the budget of the head office? Commission. How much are we taking out of this budget and using it in that building where 1,400 members are sitting? That's only one. I will also come in when the members are asking questions. I see Mr. Sharp and up and Ms. Winnie Wenya, Cindy Chukunga, and Kosi Chol. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank the department for their in-depth briefing. And flowing from both these briefings, I have some questions. The first question, Chairperson, relates to Program 1, which is the administration. As per the 2007-2008 strategic plan, the department had indicated that it would target was to maintain an average vacancy rate of about 5%. But we see that in the 2008-2009 plan, this has been, it wants to maintain an average rate of about 7%. There is a reduction in the target there. I want to understand why they have reduced their target. My second question is concerning corrections, which is a very, very significant and important program in terms of rehabilitation of offenders. We find that there is a decrease of 2.5% in comparison to 2007-08, which received an increase at that time of 1.3%, and now it is down to 9.1% of the total budget. I wanted to understand how this decrease will impact on the implementation of white paper. And secondly, are the targets that they've set in terms of implementing the unit management program that they have, these targets now are going to be realistic, given the fact that the budget has been now reduced, how it will affect that program. And finally, I'll keep some questions for later, but I would like to conclude with a question relating to Program 6. Now, the functioning and the efficiency of the federal board is very important in terms of the priorities identified in the 2008 State of the Nation Address. What progress have they made in terms of training the 52 vice chairperson as well as newly appointed chairperson of the federal board? Have they achieved those targets? And what progress report can they give us in that regard? I'll just limit myself to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hear that members are asking now questions of the new budget, the presentation, the expenditure. May we allow me just to ask this one on the expenditure on slide 45. Why did you spend 77.13%? Why and what is going to happen with the remaining? You have it. State of expenditure for the year to date. You want to know percentage spent. Last year you had 200 million rand all over. You gave it back to treasury. Is it correct? It was 200 million rand that the department gave back to treasure. Yes, it was 200 million. And I can foresee now again why is the department not able to spend all the money commission before we go into the other thing. We must first find out. If we approve this thing, we must know, because there's 11 million rand now, 11 kilos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are saying, yes, give the department 11 kilos. But they are not able to spend the entire 11 kilos. Why?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm sure the Finance Officer would want to also comment on that. Firstly, the spending that we see to date is the spending up to the end of January, that leaves us with 2 months up to March, within February and in March. That is not included in there. So we're talking before the close of the financial year. But let me say that we have in the presentation tried to articulate where the main spending concern is. It is indeed when it comes to infrastructure and the provision for infrastructure budget, particularly in relation to Kimberley. You will recall, Chairperson, that with the Kimberley project, we've had money given to us to conclude that project, but as Ms. China was stating in the presentation, there's a very nature of infrastructural work is such that you have to look at it in over a longer term period. A new connection of this facility is not built within a year, and therefore it's given the contingency such as labor action, lost days as a result of train weather conditions, and so on. Contractors find it very difficult to stay within the planned expenditure. So it's essentially the low billing that we've seen from public work arising from the low expenditure that is tax progressing. Obviously the question is, what is it that we are doing about it? We have been, I've had meetings with the Director General of Public Works. We've been meeting with the project manager, and we've been saying to them, we need to look at ways of fast-tracking expenditure even the possibility of making sure that all your materials are fitted, so that we don't have the situation of understanding. They have tried to do so in as far as they could, but unfortunately it's quite clear that we're heading for some under expenditure at the end of the financial year arising from poor billing from the Kimberley project. We would have to, cat in hand, go back to Treasury to yet again ask for a rollover for that infrastructure project. But I'm saying it's in the very nature of infrastructural work that it cuts across financial years. But you have specifically referred to the fact that we have given money back to Treasury in the past. In the past, some of the funds that we've given back for the reduction of our baseline resulted largely from two areas. The first area is the fact that we have had money on our budget over the last few years earmarked for the building of the new correctional centers, which, as you know, we could not proceed with for all kinds of reasons. The first major reduction of our baseline was in order to correct that anomaly. But the second area where we've had serious problems with underspending, as you would know, arises from the fact that for many years on our personnel budget, we've had to budget, or rather we had money on our personnel budget that was meant for appointing staff, but we could not appoint those staff because we were currently, always had to dip into that money to pay for the overtime that was running out of control. Now, it's important to recognize that when we decided to phase out Saturday as a day, as an overtime day, it freed up huge sums of money. In fact, Treasury would concur that up to 600 million rand on your personal budget was freed up because of our decision to not to pay for Saturday time. Now, to have 600 million at one go and to use differently is a total impossibility. One of the mistakes that we have accepted with Treasury was the fact that Treasury has not intervened earlier to try and reduce our allocation to personnel to allow us over a period of time to catch up with filling those spots. They have subsequently done so. And so the reductions that we see in personnel is really to begin to plan for us to better implement the filling of vacancies arising from the savings of that money. Chairperson, what we have also agreed with Treasury is that, and we know that DCS is a labor-intensive organization, and a huge proportion of our budget is earmarked for staff salaries. So when you talk about a budget allocation of which, say, roughly 66% is earmarked on personnel, and when that is translated into something like, for argument's sake, 9 billion rand of the total budget, a percentage or a fraction of that, if you don't spend it, is a huge amount translated into millions. So what we've agreed with Treasury is that in fact they will dig a bit deeper in the sense that they will not fund us for the full compensation budget. They will take money to allow for a certain level of vacancy rate. So that the money that departments have on the budget that's not spent doesn't reflect such huge under-expenditure as in previous years. So we try to manage it, and you will see from that we're actually doing quite well in terms of populating our establishment, because you will see from the time that we phased out overtime to where we are now, we're talking about a growth of approximately 10,000 net bodies coming into the system. Roughly 33,000 staff members we had 3 years ago. We've earlier reported that it's currently in excess of 42,000, and we're going towards targeting 46,000 employees. But, colleagues, and honourable members, since the question came up around the issue of vacancies, let me just say that indeed, on the one hand, we have made significant gains to your business in terms of bringing warm bodies into the department, as can be seen from the current total. But on the other hand, we've been presented with challenges, part of which the Chief Financial Officer alluded to, the pressure that we've had on the Resolution 1 of 2007 mean that we all actually going to be quite tight when it comes to our personal budget for this year. So if you see a slowing down, you will see really to accommodate that. For instance, we already at the beginning of January we've done all the work to take up the entry level students, but we delay that to April in order for us to actually only spend against that as from the 1st of April. Now, if that more than 1,000 staff members were brought on board, it would automatically do something quite radical about reducing the vacancy rate. But we've deliberately slowed that down in order not to overspend in our compensation part of the budget. If you see that difference, that our overspending or our spending on compensation is quite hot, whereas infrastructure is a bit low. So it's these things that we constantly have to balance. But I'm quite confident, Chair, going forward, we will get the sort of allocative efficiencies that Treasury wants us to have so that our budget and actual spending and actual targets can be aligned better, as you've seen from our actual reporting. I don't know if the CFO may want to add to that explanation.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think, Chair, it is a balance. While we acknowledge the need and understand that there are reasons for it, but I'm also faced with the balance that if circumstances arise where there has been unspent, it still has to be spent for the purposes for which funds were allocated. And that is why already in the past few months and going forward, we've implemented very rigorous measures to track spending and then look at action plans going forward. And very aggressively, if we notice underspending by any activity manager, as opposed to waiting for them to volunteer explanations of surpluses, because they very aggressively interrogate the plans and look at where they are in the procurement process, and should they not meet those, reallocate the funds where it is necessary. And that's done with the concurrence of Treasury where it's necessary. Because we also face, we need to still comply with the legal procurement processes and all the legislation as well. Not an excuse, but as I said, we're putting that balance. But going forward on activities, we have implemented that measure. But certainly for items like public work and even some CETA, where they tend to go later or they have a time lag, in a cash-based system, it's very painful for me because you still owe those funds and once it's been surrendered, you still have the liability, but you no longer have the funds. What we have done in the circumstances is also with some of these lady departments, they've engaged very proactively on a monthly basis now, looking for them to pull out on time to enable us to spend the funds that have been allocated. Certainly, Chairperson, with the pages from Resolution 102007, for which there were not full funds allocated by Treasury, and similarly for the implementation of the OEG for health workers. Having looked at our current vacancy rates and then approached Treasury and said we would then fund these but from rearranging from our existing funds as opposed to looking for additional funds and then having to improve efficiencies at least within our current budget. So if you look at just the numbers without the explanation, it seems that it's not being managed, but I can assure you that there have been many efforts put in place on that to manage within the budget allocated to us. And finally, I think there has to be funds surrendered and if we've exhausted alternatives to spend them legitimately within the framework, I think that is possible. I would rather be transparent in that process. This is true.
Are we going to see a rollover this year again, Commission?
Chairperson, unfortunately, especially in the rollover committee, is very strict. But on the issue of infrastructure, that is where we hope we will get the support of this committee to plead for the further rollover so that we can complete the Kimberley infrastructure project. That's the only area where we will seek a rollover, and we've already discussed that with Treasury. So unfortunately, Chair, I have to admit that yes, on infrastructure there will be a rollover applied for that purpose.
See, Commissioner, why I'm asking and treasure it is on the very same prison that one invited. The department asked funds during this year. I think 130 million. Can you help me? What was the amount there?
$500 million.
The department asked money from the department. Myself personally, I discussed it with the man to say that we have supported that thing. Now the department will give money back for all over on the very same thing on prison, on that symbolic thing. Now please help me to understand. Mr.
Mbeki,
please help me to understand.
$500 million was rolled over to complete the thing. As you have heard, that there have been some delays, so the previous will be finished later than was planned because of the issue that has been delayed. Now, the 3 months, waiting, so to say. Because of the time, because of the rain and etc. But I do believe that the amount of the process, is far, far very, very small. And the dedication allows us to roll over the amount for 2 years. If we don't roll over, they won't be able to finish the trip. So we use that term. They won't be able to finish the trip. And we have not funded them an additional amount for the coming year. So they will be disadvantaged all over with that continuation. And I'm sure now, coming in the coming year, they won't ask for the role by the terms of
it. How do you know, Mr. Mbeki? You see, Mr. Mbeki, I hear that what you are saying, that it won't be a big amount, maybe 100 and so on. You see, this committee must also go to finance committee. This committee must go to finance committee and convince them to say, yeah, no, let's give them the money. But I am not convinced personally that, yes, money, 500 million. The department asked 500 million. And now the department can't spend the 500 million. That is exactly what the finance committee is going to ask this committee. How do you approve now and then to go? I am saying, let us not debate it any. I am saying to the department, maybe the department must answer this. Is it bad management or what else?
She said to me, I don't really want me to answer now, but I imagine that she we will always be able to account, short of me going there physically with some members of the committee to really assist with the actual voting. I can say that seriously, that's how often I feel about Kimberley. But that's in essence the problem that we've been discussing also at previous committees, the problems and difficulties with getting into infrastructural projects and the complexity of planning and budgeting. There's no excuse for that, because ultimately this is what I said at the time. In as far as I have a responsibility to call to account my counterparts in public works, and in as far as I have a responsibility to interact with the project managers to speed up the process, that we are doing all the time. And I'm sure Treasury would attest to the fact that there's ongoing engagement. This is where, unfortunately, we are dependent on other role players. there's very little I can say about that, Shepherd, that it's in the nature of infrastructural work. But we will give all the explanations of the work that we've done in order to ensure that we manage within the allocation within the time period. But it seems that from the 530 million that we've asked last year, you're looking at the possibility of an amount of 247 million that will have to still be rolled over. And as Mr. Mbeki was saying, that the law knowing that that's what happens with infrastructural projects, the law allows us to look at it in a multi-year period. That's quite comfort when it comes to giving us certainty about how this plan. So that's the reality that we have to go through. Thank you.
Commissioner Chen, can I remind you what the Finance Committee has asked? When they approved this 500 million, I think the CFO was in there. You were not there. When they asked this specific question to us, I think you were there looking at it. When they asked, will you be able to spend this entire 500 million? And Mr. Jay, he represented. He said, yes, we are going to spend this entire 500 million.
Captain, I think maybe so that was, I'm not trying to be bad, but I have said it.
Yeah.
But it's not everything to depend entirely on public wealth. So the department that needs to be in that open test in public wealth, the type of resources that they have. So, in a manner, they say they can say, what they say they're going to spend this full amount because you think they have to say so. So they're entirely dependent on public wealth. They have, they just have to deal with the construction is managed by public wealth. And they just get it from as well. So there could be delays in construction, but there could also be delays in actually submitting this deal to the public to correctional services. So I think when we are dealing with some of this correctional services for this matter, we also need to find that the services to be there. That might be that if they actually are in the hands of public health, as Commissioner said, that trying to impress upon the public of public health. Even submitting daily. For example, your ground diagnostic, for example, on the municipal charges, you also see that there is underfunding because they are waiting for the aid to come from elsewhere. So that problem that I think the committee needs to be applied to.
Thank you. Please leave that door open, please. Leave it open because it's giving a lot of up and leave it open. Leave it open.
Yeah. Thanks for the explanation, because I think it's quite critical for this committee to understand the facilitatory interactions also with the finance committee. The one issue when we requested for the rollover, the information about the amount that we need and that we will spend in that particular year was received from the Department of Public Works, indeed as Mr. Mendes is saying. But the rollover committee sits in April, I think it is, to make a determination of what's needed. And so in March, towards April, that's the information that we received from Public Works. And that's what we passed on to the rollover committee. At the time, the supplementary budget was tabled and there were portfolio hearings, of course, you ended up having better information. And Mr. Mutseki indeed raised, and this was a cause of furore at the Finance Committee meeting, Mr. Mutseki raised these concerns with the expenditure trend after our initial amount that we requested. What we have said subsequent to that is that we will have these engagements with the contractors and with public works to improve the space. Of course, our efforts to do so did render some results, as I've said, you know, purchasing materials up front and so on, but not to the desired level that we wanted to achieve. But just to clarify that when we ask for the money, you act on certain information. By the time this money comes, you have different information that begins to create those kinds of discrepancies. And simply what we do in between is to make sure that we put as much pressure on our partners, or rather our suppliers in this case, of the infrastructural work, public works. And I've had about two meetings with my counterpart in this regard, and Mr. Mutseki, I know who is the Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for infrastructure, is also meeting with the operations DDG on a regular basis. We also regularly get feedback on the level of completion so that we can monitor and make them feel that we're really keeping them on their toes. But yeah, thanks for that explanation.
Thanks. Any other question on expenditure before we go over?
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a lot of questions that I want to ask, but I'll start with the program 7 on facilities. Chairperson, my first question will be, what is the alternative affordable way of building a new facility other than property? And the second one will be, do you have enough finance and political capacity to manage and sustain 7-day program? Chairperson, I don't know, I've got many questions.
No, ask five.
Okay.
I'll give you another one.
Yeah, okay. Then, on a social integration chapter, I'll also maybe ask about two or three questions. My first question will be, chapter, in the 2007 and 2008 strategic plan, the department indicated the intention to train 52 vice chairperson and 12 newly appointed chairperson of the parole board. Has this been achieved? 2, the department has indicated the intention to introduce electronic monitoring in the near future. Are there plans to increase this budget in the near future? What are the costs? And how does the department plan to reduce the number of parole violence by 2% from the average baseline of 11,000? What impact will this plan have on the budget? Are there sufficient staff to monitor and track parole and probation violators? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Marwini. Cindy Chibunga.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation by both presenters from the department and the Excellency Award, which some of us could not attend because of other commitments, and the fact that some of us could not stand for as the commissioner was talking about this, and in particular the debt grant, I got in process to get more information and find that so many papers in. But he spoke about the debt grant, and I wanted to be sure as to whether it will be for every official that dies, or it will be for specific deaths, such as a certain death or a natural death or any other death. Because I think I appreciate it very much, but one would probably want to get more information before we say things that are not correct.
And then that is the budget for now to add what you are saying with the implementation. Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chief. Then I will go to the question on, I think, on administration, but also on the strategic plan. On performance indicators and administration, the low is to regulate and unauthorized expenditure level of over and understanding and so forth. And Captain said this has been happening over the years. And as the Captain has said, the property department has had to answer to someone once, what has changed? What is it that will be happening when I go to Carolina myself? That will probably mean to say to me that by the end of the financial year, the understanding can have been to. Because in this situation, I believe I might be wrong. That understanding or overstanding, the case they look, might indicate somehow not very good plans. The issue again on administration, the system that capable and competent employees, and this is when the department has been budgeted for the training of employees, particularly those that have been in the system for some time. And I just want to know as to what has been the impact of the training vis-a-vis the budget that the department is spending. If I go to any of the services, what is it that I will see that I did not see in 2004 when I just came to Parliament, in as far as what the officials are doing. And Chairperson, lastly, I will go to the program, which probably this time makes me to smile a little bit at the CARE program and appreciate the fact that it does seem like the department is indeed doing something about the salaries of the staff there, particularly the health workers and in particular. I just wanted to be sure because there is this that it will be nurses that are implementing primary health care. Are all nurses in the DCS implementing primary health care? That does not necessarily mean that all of them will get the salary increase and so on. And then also the existing of the donor funding received from the United States President Nelson Mandela, and it has always been there since 2005. I just want to check as to whether this is a yearly donor funding or a one-time funding. But also, I would be interested to know on how it has been sent, because if I read the ENE, it would seem like they've not said anything about it, and even the figures that are above do not include that funding. So I just want to know as to whether all these funds have been sent or how have they been sent. And of course, as to whether that survey, the prevalent survey, has yielded any results so far, so that we know whether it is serving any purpose or it's not serving any purpose. For now, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Indeed, let's have the responses from the department, and then we take another commissioner over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think some of the questions my colleagues would respond to. That on the first question that you've asked relates to the fact that we have a head office that consumes clearly quite a huge portion of the budget. You were referring to the large number of staff. Some of your statistics remain open to challenge, but I don't have the correct ones to correct you. What you refer to 1,400.
You can't challenge me. So
I'm correct. I'm telling you that I can't put up a fight even if I want to. But I think the sentiment is appreciated, the concern that our resources must be spent there where the services are delivered, notwithstanding the important role being played by head office. But having said that, just to ask the CFO to give us some of the indications of what our actual expenditure is, but also to be aware that at head office we often keep money that's meant for national projects, so it will be a bit of a distortion. But as he's giving us that breakdown, I need to say that the concern about the size of head office is something that we've been working on now for a while. Early on, Chief Deputy Commissioner is trying to research with the work that we've done to align the structure with the function. And one of the objectives of that structure-function alignment is to make sure that the functions that must be performed at local level, that is budgeted for and resourced at a local level and not at head office. So we wanted to see a kind of shift away from people at head office to the local level. And that work is about to be concluded, and already you have heard that we will implement that in that manner begin to see certain shifts. But other than that, I think it can be misleading. So let me ask the CFO just to respond to that particular question directly.
Thank you, Commissioner. The figures I have at the moment is that approximately 3.4 billion of the budget is spent at head office. And this, some of this is mainly due to the centralized activities and services that the head office does conduct. For example, the capital work projects, the facility funds and so forth, those funds would reside at head office. Otherwise, we are funding our IT services, the MISC, the mind space, the teacher. Those are some examples of the major projects that are funded at head office level for the department.
Chairperson, then to come back to the question raised by Mr. Shah, I think the first question related to the 5% vacancy rate, and you are saying there's an indication that you want to change the vacancy rate to 7%. I haven't seen the document that refers to planning of a 7% vacancy rate. I just see, because in the budget, certainly in the budget, we are budgeting for a 5% vacancy rate. The 7% vacancy rate reduction, ultimately 3%, actually that's what is from a baseline currently of 10.8%. And I think what we have learned in the past is that when you move from such a high baseline, to make a turnaround very quickly is often unrealistic. So you begin to plan for a 5% and then you'll find there's a movement upwards. And so I think it's more a conservative estimation. Early on I've given the explanation about why the vacancy rate is growing. Now to suddenly open up and begin to fill that post will take a bit slower. So I think the planning is really trying to acknowledge that that there may be some incongruence there. Although we are planning for a 5% vacancy rate in terms of the budget, but from an implementation side, to acknowledge that it may not be so easy to achieve that target. I mean, in some areas,
sorry, Commissioner, Mr. Mdete asked to be taken issue because he's taking a flight back. The minister wants to be victorious. Mr. Mdete, you are free to be excused. You want to say anything,
Thank you, Kakashi. I'd just like to say something to what I said.
Yes.
A note with appreciation, the department is all to do with qualified people, other than other priorities. So we appreciate that. And also the target to fill the candidate in Expo is part of the other priorities. So I appreciate that. I think it is from the historical perspective, it happened well from all but 10 to 100. And a lot of the idea with them, during that time, the reason for understanding, money for overspending was cutting off overtime expenses, as well as the spending on the net candidate. So the department is now understanding. That the team of its own efficiency measures by operating over time and by reforming the net candidate. What the employee was not contributing to the economy, but it was the net contribution by the employee. So the reason why we left the money there, we thought that that money would be used to increase the 7 days, to employ more employees, because the 7 days, the ability of 7 days of the program. So now that time is different, whether that small amount could be for that effort. But it didn't care because it, that, you know, the capacity to actually feel the leader. So that was a time difference. I think going forward to the challenge, so they are monitoring partners, only important things to get better from us. And I think when they know the results, I think it should be good for them when they report on that. If we can instead of that, I can that kind of compare that with last year. So when you compare with the previous year, there is a proof. We are also doing the KDM monitoring for that company, but joined by the committee went to so that you would be able to be more useful.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mbete. The President has said with the State of the Nation address, vacancies, he's giving the department 6 months to address the problem of vacancies. I'm very much happy that you are monitoring this. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Mbete. He says we're a victim of our own deficiency.
I was wondering for a moment here, but
they're very hard on that ship.
You must first really convince me that they are victims of each and every year. But we are not going to debate it. I'm saying you must first convince me with the statement that you have made. But we are not going to debate it for now.
But to come back, the issue of vacancies, just to explain again, that, and you have highlighted the need for us to focus on that. We do experience most of the challenges in the categories of professional care skills, as we have said, high levels of vacancy rates. And I think briefly, just to say to the committee, apart from the OSD that should specifically begin to target professionals and improve their remuneration and the career path and the conditions under which we employ them, we have to accept also that generally in certain categories of care skills, we're never going to get the people. And we unfortunately are going to continuously reflect high levels of vacancy. So what is it that we're going to do about it? We don't train these professionals. What are we going to do? If we've decided to embark on a dual approach, that whilst we're trying to improve the conditions of service, as well as the working conditions of our staff, we needed some creativity. And this is where we're beginning to look at insourcing and outsourcing options for some categories already. We have in the field of pharmaceutical services recently put out, or rather I've just approved that we do a feasibility study to look into the outsourcing of pharmaceutical services, given the risk involved there if you do not have the appropriate staff. The other approach that we are following is this notion of creating centers of expertise. We say with that it doesn't help us to have one psychologist working at Paul's more feeling lonely and unsupported, and there's no possibility of career pathing for that one psychologist.
we need to begin to look at pooling these professionals so that there can be some support for them, where we can, within that context, create possibilities for upward mobility as a retention strategy. So the whole notion of creating centers of expertise is another area, together with insourcing, outsourcing, together with looking at payment of the professional fees of other scarce skills, particularly auditors, knowing that there's a scarcity of auditors in the country, not only us, I should also tell you the auditors in general is suffering from a severe shortage. The few that we need to manage our internal audit function, we can't keep them, and we have to rely on other service providers to assist. So we're beginning to follow an approach to design our structure differently so that we are not shooting ourselves in the foot by creating these large numbers of posts that we never saw, and thereby creating an artificial sense of vacancy. So we hope that through those measures we will also begin to impact on the vacancy rate. I'm going to ask CDC to just respond to the two subsequent questions of Mr. Sar, CDC operations, the questions around corrections, budget and unit management, and perhaps the role of the sponsor.
In relation to the corrections program, if you look at the explanation that is given for the decrease, it's in fact because there was a specific allocation of white paper funding that went into the corrections program and was then taken from that into development and care. So I don't want to use the word optic, but I'm not quite sure what other word you use at the moment. It's an additional allocation that was made in terms of white paper funding, and it does not impact in terms of the core program of the corrections program. So I think in terms of the financial impact on the rollout of unit management, no, but that it won't impact on that. I think that what is also important for the portfolio committee to know is that at the moment there's intensive training on unit management taking place, region by region. And that will certainly put us in a position to really be able to drive and ensure that we can reach the target. So I'm very confident we can say that the budget impact, that decline is not related to a cutting of the money that's been allocated for the kind of core business of the operation, and certainly in terms of the unit management. And I think that here again is an area in which the project targeting of the offender rehabilitation part has actually had a very direct impact, because it's through that project that we've been able to make a very intensive intervention in terms of unit management, because without that you can't finger on the implementation of the OR. In terms of the training of the chairperson, I'm sure that we can follow with our chairperson with a more detailed report on it, because I don't have the detail of it at my fingertips. But the training certainly has been an ongoing process. And I think that what has been critically important is that with the functioning of the parole board and the functioning of the parole review board, we're being able to identify key areas in which we need to go back with further training. So it's certainly not going to be a one-course approach to training, but there certainly was a training program that took place, if I'm not mistaken, August, September of last year, again, of a refresher process ensuring that all of the chairpersons and vice chairpersons are taken through that process. But as you will see from the way in which we've addressed it in the strategic plan, we've identified the function of the case management committee and the parole board as something that we need to pay very serious attention to. After that auditing process, we then identify further areas that either need systemic attention or further training attention. But it is a critical part of ongoing work.
Thank you, CDC. Perhaps the addition also, Mr. Shoy, will be happy to know that our key focus is also on trying to standardize the role board decisions so that you find this commonality across the board. And so we're working very closely with the National Council, with the CDC corrections to develop those standardized guidelines. It's an area that we remain very interested in to bring some improvement. Thanks, CDC. The very penetrating questions asked by the Honourable Ngwenya. I'm grateful for the questions that you've asked, because these are things that I think we need to tell the committee about. The first one that you are asking about is, what are the alternative affordable ways of building correctional facilities other than CBC? Just to say to you, you will recall from our previous interactions, when assessed against the criteria of affordability, that the value for money
Thirdly, response to the findings of the transaction advisor was that the TPP does offer the best option. That's what we've been engaging the committee about. And we have given you the information in that regard. But I think what is something that we really need the support of the committee, something that we want to test, because we want to challenge this thing, that the PPP really provides greater affordability, value for money, and management of this. We want to challenge that, and we think that Kimberley is going to be that opportunity, because here, on all accounts, we want to have Kimberley to be run on the same basis as these PPPs are run. And we also need to look at making sure that they're not overcrowded. With the support of this committee, you give us that opportunity to say, Kimberley, let's test that, let's compete on the same basis, and let's begin to prove that actually, when you compare apples to apples, we can prove you wrong. So we're not there yet, but that's where we want to go, and that's why Kimberley is such an important project for us. And you must also understand that when you begin to see features, there are certain features not at Kimberley. Don't compare it to some of the existing communities, compare it against some of the PPPs. For instance, official housing. We're not going to have official housing at Kimberley. That's why we spoke about the importance of focusing on recruitment also in Kimberley. Having taken into account some of the concerns that members have raised, we shouldn't exclude others. We need to find other creative ways of making it possible for people from outside to find reasonable accommodation. But with Kimberley, we hope we will be able to go towards that model. So thank you for that question. The second very penetrating question that you're asking is, will we have enough money and enough people to sustain the implementation of seven-day establishment? The question on both accounts must be on the number of staff. You go visit our centres, they will tell you we never have enough people. So on the issue of capacity, if I don't want to be proved wrong by my staff, I'm not interested in telling you that we have enough staff, despite the fact that for seven-day establishment, we have, for that project in itself, we've taken on board 8,311 officials. We still do not have enough. And this is why what pushed us back to the drawing board, where we went to our centres during what we call the Operation Kahedu, where we sent our senior managers down to the correctional centres. And we said to them, as we move towards the implementation of 7 days, look at the staffing issues, look at the infrastructure issues, look at our objectives, and tell us what is possible, what we need to do. And that work that was undertaken by senior managers at the coalface, coming back, they tried to present alternative ways of us achieving the same objectives. And so you will recall that whereas the initial model for 7 days also was to have a full shift system, we've now changed that model to say we're talking about a two-shift system, because in that way we can begin to take into account the numbers or the lack of sufficient numbers that we have. And we've been told by ourselves that if we go that route, the likelihood of success is greater. But even in that case, we are not 100% sure. This is why we also want to report to the committee that we have identified Johannesburg for the phased rollout of 7 day establishment. We have said that if 7 day establishment works at Johannesburg, where we have all these challenges, it can work anywhere. So we're going to be looking at testing 7 day establishment, and it must present further lessons to us. I also want to say to this committee that 7 day establishment, whilst the 1st of July is earmarked as the implementation date, we must accept that it cannot be a big bang approach where we say tomorrow we have 7 day establishment. We're dealing with people, and we're dealing with complex processes. And that's why we talk about phasing in, and that we actually made quite the way off the list. I'm really sorry that Mr. Valerian Betty from National Treasury is not here, because we need the support of Treasury. When, you know, people working with finance who do these planning, they expect things to happen. When you say 1st of July something will happen, and so that cost will no longer be there. And in their budgeting processes, that's the same way they've approached the implementation of the 7 day. As it comes 1st of July, it will not be there. So we need to have further engagements with Treasury to just share with them the impact of the phasing in approach of 7 day establishment on our budget. So that responds to the second part of the question. Do we have sufficient money? I don't think so, but it will have to be the subject of further engagement with Treasury as we begin to do all the number counting and the final work through the testing in Johannesburg and the subsequent rollout, the phased rollout from the 1st of July. Ms. Schreiner, you may want to pick up on some of the social integration, but allow me to just pick up on the electronic monitoring question directly that you've asked. And we're quite aware that there was a presentation a week ago to this committee on electronic monitoring and the inmate tracking systems. On electronic monitoring, all we can say is that at this stage, Jefferson, we have agreed to include as part of the work that we asked the CSIR, the Center for Industrial and Scientific Research, to include electronic monitoring as part of the work that they do for us. And we hope that the work that they do will be a sufficient basis to qualify for what we call a feasibility study. In other words, before we approach Treasury for money, we need to tell Treasury about those, we must answer those questions that Treasury wants us to answer. The first issue is the cost issues, the affordability issues. The second issue is the value for money issues. Introducing electronic monitoring, what efficiency gains, and what other, how will it impact on our overall service delivery, and lastly, what are the risks that we are managing through the introduction of electronic monitoring. CSIR must do all that work for us, and only once that work is done will we be able to table to Treasury a business case upon which Treasury will decide yes or no. We have substantiated and motivated, and they will therefore support over a period of time. So it may be, for instance, that, and the way that we plan is the 3-year cycle. We may find that electronic monitoring is not something that's implemented next year or in the second year. Normally, Treasury would bring into the 3rd year, the outer year of the MTF, new initiatives such as this. So I wouldn't want to make promises that within the next year or even 2 years we will see it, but certainly we're working towards the 3rd year of the MTF and making that business case and persuading Treasury, and of course looking ourselves at whether this will have the desired impact, electronic monitoring that we are seeking. Ms. Schreiner, you may want to just deal with some of the other questions or some of the questions.
Thank you. On the issue of the reduction of violations, I think there were two elements to this. The one was the impact on the budget, and secondly, whether we had the staff to be able to track the violations and misconduct. Obviously, the electronic monitoring project becomes a critical aspect of that because it deals really directly with the issue of monitoring. But leaving that aside, I think that the key challenge that we face in relation to misconduct and violations, how adequate are our systems of being able to check parole conditions and ensure that there's necessary support to parolees or probationers during their process. And I think that the work that is being done in social reintegration that is mapped out in this project around the development of a risk classification tool and an assessment tool that is used to interface the process transition from being inside to being on parole should assist us in being able to set parole conditions that are appropriate, and being able to then make sure that we put in place the necessary mechanisms for more intensive monitoring or more intensive support to the offenders. I think that the challenge that we face in our shift from the approach we've had to community correction to what we are saying now in terms of social reintegration is that we need to ensure that the rehabilitation process, the correction process, is not something that stops when you leave the facility, but it goes through into an integrated support system that involves your families, involves other community-based organizations, but it also involves other government departments. And I think that those are all elements that we are putting in place to ensure that there is better support to and supervision of the offenders. So I think that should go some way to being able to ensure that we're able to do. So in terms of the impact on budget, within the budget that we have for social reintegration, those elements of developing those tools are part and parcel of it. Obviously, the other aspect is whether the staff that we have in community corrections offices are indeed appropriately trained and have the appropriate competencies. And part of the social reintegration project is aiming to be able to say, what do we expect? What are the competencies we expect of a community corrections officer? And with our new concept of social reintegration, it's going to be quite substantially different
from what we can, previously identified as the kind of people that are needed to community groups. So I think that we part of the process of the project is then also ensuring that we've got the right competency of spiritual officials who are working in community spiritual offices, and that should also, because of the way in which they would be interacting with parolee situations, also go some way to reducing the level of the violation. Perhaps I'm sure that the CFO would want to touch on the issue of performance indicators in relation to the finance assets. But if I can just from my perspective, I think that the one element that will be quite significantly different is the emphasis the CFO was putting on the India monitoring and the development of spending plans, and I think also the way in which from strategic planning side and finance side we have a far more integrated approach to our planning and our resources should get us to a far better position in terms of being able to ensure that understanding does become something that you don't immediately connect to curriculum services or the overspending that Mr. Ndeka has previously spoken to. So I think the mechanisms within our financial management system that have improved over the last couple of years, but also most importantly, the approach that the department has adopted to ensure that we are doing integrated planning and resources. We're not developing a strategic plan and then trying to throw money to it. That process is going to be something quite important and something that we should be improving.
Before Commissioner responds, just put out that members, please, and everybody in this meeting. Please grab something there, bring it back, because we are not going to wait for lunch. Let us ask and do justice to this thing. Please feel free and turn up and go and commission and everybody here. Yes. Go and take something there for you to eat. Members, you hear what I'm saying. So we are not going to. But can you please help me that it happens? Bring something for me.
Should we do it? Shepherd, can we stagger the way now? Otherwise.
Sorry? No. 1-1. You like to have a mass movement.
No. I'm saying must stagger it so that the meeting continues.
Excellent, sharp. Okay, yeah, continue.
Yes, well, you may want to reply to the question that Mr. Stein has started to answer for the Honourable Kunga on the way school and the information and what it is. And then possibly also deal while you're with that and deal with the issue of the PESA funding.
Thank you, Commissioner. On the question of unauthorized expenditure under the local spending, I would like to draw the Commission's attention to the slide, slide number 15. When we talk about steps taken to improve financial management, while I've covered it in my presentation, just to reflect on these again, is that we do monitor these on a monthly basis and at relevant branch and regional level, even at management areas. And then it would escalate to a national level as well. Furthermore, we do have, financial statements or the India monitor is prepared by finance for which the relevant branch activity manager has to respond for the under or overspent expenditure in that regard. We have also on a monthly basis compliance reporting. So we have a very specific set of questionnaires that has been compiled and just submitted to National Treasury. So over and above, apart from merely taking disciplinary action, we also looking to prevent this and be in a proactive way to encourage good behavior to prevent an unauthorized and expenditure as well as the under expenditure on that. And I think the conclusion on the chair, there would have to be disciplinary measures taken we despite all of these initiatives and the training and the information and the monitoring, should these measures fail, there would have to be some accountability in this regard. And that should cover what we want to do with them.
Perhaps just to directly also respond to Honourable Chikunga on the issue of what improvements we want to see and how you're going to be able to measure it when you do visit the correctional centre. It's going to be very difficult to do so if somebody has visited the correctional centre. It may be necessary for us, Chairperson, to come back to this committee and begin to share with you some of the results. One of the things that you're arguing that the Shriner is not telling you about. We are trying to develop an instrument where we can begin to measure correctional centers directly against the number of measurements or indicators that we have to measure, so that we have a performance system that gives us certain pertinent information about the functioning of the correctional center, and therefore also by implication the improvement of the functioning of that correctional center over time and also compared to each other. So by merely going there to see, I hope that our improved measurement will begin to make those changes, but you won't be able to see just like that. And I'm saying perhaps at some time we can begin to share with the committee some of the work that we are doing in order to improve the measurement of the performance at the local level, because that's where we want to see the difference occurring, where we begin to look at the results of both our internal audit findings as well as the results of the auditor general, together with the inspector's report and other indicators such as reported fraudulent activity, wasteful expenditure, and all those things together with service delivery statistics and targets are put into this one system. So we're quite keen to begin to see measurement at that level, and so I share your anxiety over that, and I'm saying maybe the Shriner can at some occasion come to the committee and just talk about some of those tools. But CFO, if you can just deal with the PEPCO issue.
Thank you, Commissioner. The question was as to the donor funding and what amount has been allocated. With a few times applying for R1 million in the budget, of which 4.1 million has been spent so far. On the donor funding in this regard. Over and above the donor funding, we also make a presentation to depend on the amount for our HIV and some of our statutory requirements in providing certain healthcare services to our inmates, but having realized that there are resources available from donor funds and so forth, so we do have a comprehensive approach or a wider approach into the medical space. Because having looked at the numbers that we have said and the funds that have been allocated, we realize it may not be sufficient to cover the population that we know it has to cover. But for now, that's the other measures we have in place.
I may just continue then to complete on the question asked by the Honourable Chikunga. First one on the debt front, thank you for that question, because it does help us to clarify that we're not talking about all debts that occur while you work for these things. We're talking about debts that occur while you're at work and directly as a result of the work that you are doing. So, you know, this is one area where you do not want to see any perverse incentives where people become reckless. You think it may be surprising, but people may think of ways of accessing this, and you wouldn't want to be part of that perverseness. So really, where people have been irresponsible or negligent, obviously there will be questions about that. But certainly, in instances where people have lost their lives in the line of duty, we will provide that amount of 200 rand to the family members of the deceased. I want to reiterate, we don't say with that this is how we value love. We can never make up for those losses. But as you know, during these periods, while waiting on compensation of the compensation commissioner on the one hand, as well as the pension fund, those families often go through hardships, and we want to make sure where we can avoid that in recognition of their commitment, we can do so. Where it is, but this is for what we, our discussions with National Treasury is that luckily still the number of deaths that occur on duty are of such a nature that we can absorb this within our existing compensation budget. So from that angle, yes indeed, we do have the funds to pay out for this provision. Honourable Chikunga have also asked a question around training and the impact of our training interventions. It's of course one of those things that's difficult to measure. I mean, one of the ways to measure the impact of training is immediately when you kind of interview or ask employees to complete a questionnaire about the knowledge that they've gained. But on the whole, when we talk about training, much of the training that we've invested in recently is the training on junior and middle management in particular, in addition to the specialized functional training. And we are saying to get the training together with the completion of our policy and procedure regime should overall contribute to greater efficiency and compliance within the organization. So measuring whether the training is what the impact is, we need to look at whether there's a reduction in the number of non-compliance from your inspection reports, from internal audit reports, and whether indeed we are turning the department around in terms of the qualifications that we receive from the Auditor General. And while we are saying that already we can begin to see progress, we need to be a bit more rigorous in measuring that. Whilst on the side of the qualifications that we receive, we know some of the interventions are more long-term, like the asset management interventions and the work that needs to happen there. But we are beginning to see changes. We need to be a bit more forthright in terms of giving the actual measures to say, these were the number of areas where we had non-compliance, these are the improved results, this is the result of our inspection report, these are the improved results, area for area, case by case, and over a period of time. But I can assure you, training is critically important, but without having the necessary procedures and policies and frameworks in place, it also doesn't help. And if through your monitoring and evaluation system you don't have the discipline to measure it, it's also no good. So the work that the Shrine is doing on the monitoring and evaluation side will help us to better be able to better report to this committee on the actual results, including the results of our training. The question you've asked around nurses and the and whether they function as primary health care practitioners, just to say to the committee, yes, we have had a situation that with the occupation-specific dispensation for nurses initially, nurses in DCS were declared to be functioning as general nursing practitioners in terms of the new OSD. It's something that we challenged, and we I did inform my counterpart in health that we have had an agreement with the Department of Health since 2004 that DCS delivers primary health care services in the first instance. And therefore, for all intents and purposes, our medical practitioners, our nurses in particular, are functioning within the primary health care milieu. The implication of that is quite radical, because if primary health care is considered within the OSD as a specialized area of nursing, and therefore compared to general nurses, primary health care nurses would earn considerably more than general nurses. And it's for that reason that we fear that it may lead to a lot of unhappiness and put additional pressure on the correctional system if we do not have the nurses, knowing also that the healthcare, given the concentration of people, are more severe within our facilities. That we have said, we will insist that our nurses who have been in the system are recognized as being primary healthcare practitioners. So that is what we have done. But of course, it's not all our nurses who do have the primary healthcare qualification. And this is where I have to point out that we will give them a 3-year grace period to acquire that primary healthcare qualification, those of them who do not have it. Those of them who have it, of course, will benefit by having continuous upgrading of this service. For the others, the incentive will be get it within 3 years so that you can continually be upgraded after the initial increase that you would have received. What we also have to accept that now that we have an OSC for nurses, and now and considering that it is indeed a career party model, we need to say, let's use that model to say that even within the primary healthcare setting, you can have different categories of people. So we are saying as new people come in, it may mean that we may appoint some new nurses as general practitioners, and they will come in knowing that they will work as general practitioners and not as primary healthcare nurses. But the distinction that we're drawing is between those who are currently in the system who will be primary healthcare practitioners. We'll give them 3 years to acquire the qualification, and the distinction between those who will come in, some of who will come in as general practitioners and nursing assistants and others that the new OSD provides for, and others will come as primary healthcare practitioners. So more variation in order to build the team delivering on primary healthcare. The last part of, in fact, I think that was the last.
Yes.
Will they all get salary increases? Certainly those who have been identified to do primary healthcare will benefit. They have already, we started to pay out initially, we pay them in terms of the general nursing provision, but there is a, after the decision that we've taken, they will also get the additional funding to recognize the fact that they're working in the primary healthcare system. Shepard, I think that covers all the questions. Okay.
Thank you very much. Remember, it's 1:15. We are having a sitting at 2:00. I know that you are having a lot of questions. I am not going to stop you to ask the questions, but I'm going to give other members a chance also to, if they are having questions, to ask. And then we will do the members. But let me ask the commission, you know, when we are doing oversight work with these members, that's a very burning issue when it comes to accommodation for staff in the center. Do you have any budget for, you know, I must say, commission, and the members here will testify, to say that, you know, in some of the areas, I can't remember, was it in Port Shepstone, where we found our staff is staying in places like as if they are in the shed, in the shed there. And I know that Lewinian Wenan in Gosit Kolo is always talking about this. Now, this is the right platform to ask this question. Do we have any budget for that? But before you respond to that, Commissioner, in the Eastern Cape, I was informed that the regional years of correction are staying in a hotel there with his family. Now, apparently, the department is paying 28,000 rand a month. And up until now, he's still staying in the hotel. Can you give us any clarity? Why is the department spending 28,000 rand a month on an official staying in a hotel, not using any other? And how long will this official stay in this hotel for 28,000 rand a month? 28,000 rand a month, and I think it is more than a year now in that hotel. Can you please give us a commission response? If you can't, if you maybe must come back to us with the information, I will also come back. But it's totally not correct if it is true that this official is staying in that hotel with his family since he was deployed from, I think, from Gauteng to Eastern Cape, and he's staying there. Specifically, I think it is in East London where he stayed.
Chairperson, to add on that and what you are saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. maybe if a commissioner doesn't have an answer today, we also found when we go to oversight that the members are paying for the quarters that they are leaving. We find that it's one room, but they share that one room.
Yeah.
And the money that they take from their salary is the money that can pay, I think, for two people. But one person, I don't know the meaning what to say, but it was looks like they are taking 1,000 from their salary. And for us, it was bad. If we find that there's one person that is sitting in the hotel, get paid, get funds to pay that money for the hotel. But people who are soldiers, good soldiers of the centers, are living in such a way. So if maybe, Commissioner, you don't have that information, I won't force you to answer that now. You can go and look it for yourself and come back with the answer, because really it's very embarrassing. And if there is a budget for the members, is it that budget needs to be increased so that they can live better? We also recommend that it will be better for us maybe to look for the land for our members, that there must be more quarters that must be filled. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks. On this issue, on the accommodation, and then we'll go for other questions.
Okay, and Chairperson, I think it was somewhere around Caledon where the members complained that they were paying the amount of money for rent they were paying for one room is equal to that man paying for the whole house with three bedrooms. And again, the refuse removal all over that area again was terrible. There were flies all over, and there was no privacy, no nothing. Some youngsters were running from a hot shower through a cold air into their bedroom, and that was terrible. If the department could look into that, it would be grateful.
No, thank you very much, Nkosi. Bishop Tolo, you are welcome. I received your apology that you will join us later. Enjoy the lunch, Bishop Tolo. Commissioner,
oh, good.
I'm so happy that you decided to bring in on this question about accommodation in the nightlife. and perhaps it may be necessary for us to come to this committee and deal with this matter in much more detail. Because, as you may be aware, we've had the performance audit conducted by the Auditor General a year ago. And the findings of the Auditor General is serious and problematic and concerns most of what it is that you are saying. It is a problem. let me say quite up front, I think the issue of official housing in this year for many years has been abused. And having acknowledged that there's been abuse and poor management of our housing, quite clearly, the question is whether we developing mechanisms to begin to turn that around. Indeed, it's one of the projects that we're also asking as part of our partnership with CSIR for them to focus on, so that we can better manage the housing stock. amongst a series of other interventions, the first of which I have to say that the provision of housing in BCA remains an anomaly. It may have been appropriate many years ago when facilities were closed far from communities. Whilst we have to acknowledge that there are still facilities built far from communities, the most of our facilities are in close proximity to the community. Chairperson, and therefore I want to say quite categorically, yes, that DCS is not in the business, in the providing accommodation to staff members. CCA is not in the business of providing accommodation. The fact that we've inherited some staff houses, and this is now a scarce resource for which Treasury has not given us an additional thing for many years, is what's creating this competition for this scarce resource. Apart from the fact that Treasury has refused to give us money for hospital accommodation to build that, we see a number of other factors that impact on it, such as people that occupying accommodation who should not be on the terrain. So the abuse of official accommodation is there. Certainly what I can say is that we do not have a choice, and this is the route, this is what I've explained with regard to Kimberley. Accommodation is one of the things that pushes up the per capita cost that DCA pays in relation to our inmates compared to private facilities. There's no such factor as accommodation. Furthermore, the reason why we must unequivocally and clearly say that we're not in the business of providing accommodation is that we've seen shelters and many old retired correctional officials, when they reach retirement, they will use their last few cents that they get from their pension to go and stay in the house. And by that time, the house prices are so exorbitant that they then do not have money to live on during their retirement. So we need to, and yesterday I discussed, with the leadership of Popco, to say we must move on this issue of accommodation. And as painful as it is, encourage our members to acquire assets so that when they retire, we really do not feel guilty that we've spoiled them over all these years. Now that we acknowledge that we have a problem, one of the things that I can tell you we have done, we have already decided that in respect of senior managers, SMS members, with immediate effect, we will begin to introduce the concept of what we pay reasonable rent. Although we are saying that the responsibility for regulating payment of rentals is that of the coordinating departments, particularly Public Works, DPSA and Treasury, we are saying that our situation is so peculiar that we need to begin to take action ourselves. We've decided, Chairperson, to begin to increase the amount paid by senior managers by 40% within 3 months after we have notified senior managers of that decision. So that's the first step, so as to begin to introduce some disincentive for people to be on the premises. And we will increase that over the years in order to put pressure on people to acquire their own accommodation. What we've also said to labour, to organised labour, is that we will amend our policy, that for some of our facilities, especially those in the rural areas, we can still make a case for people to be given official accommodation. But we need to be very careful in determining which facilities those are. So there's going to be a lot of activity around the issue of managing official accommodation, also with new legislation that's coming into play that places an obligation on us to manage better our fixed assets. So yes, it's a matter that's occupying us at the moment. And hopefully, yesterday I said to the Deputy General Secretary that I needed their help, because this is one area where workers will really be very unhappy. And they said, well, they're quite clear. They've given us the domain. They will support us, if only from the point of view that our staff must recognize that they must invest in assets and acquire their own accommodation. So I'm very happy to say that I do have the support of organized labor. But there are some specific issues. And it really pains me when we hear allegations of people uplifting and overcrowding, even within the facts and so on. I'm saying these are the type of abuses that we cannot tolerate, and it really shows that there is a lack of managerial responsibility at the local level, and a lack of systems to make sure that people are held to account so that these things are not abused. I know of worse cases, people who have their own houses, and yet renting out those houses and occupying official accommodation. The stories are terrible, and we have to be quite honest that we need to bring some focus on this. Chairperson, on the specific issue that you have raised, the person referring to is a director responsible for corrections is being transferred from the Western Cape to the Eastern Cape, because we were really challenged in terms of we needed a very strong manager to begin to deal with the challenges that we were facing around corrections and Cape broadly. Security also is part of this portfolio, and we identified a senior manager who we felt really could help us make that turnaround happen. What we did not bank on at the time when the person was transferred was that the property prices and the property available for renting for senior managers in London in particular is extremely scarce. Now, I do know, I don't have all the facts, but I do know it's been a problem that the regional commissioner has been talking to me about. We are dependent on public work to provide accommodation for an official on transfer, if that official is being transferred in the interest of the state. This is sometimes how our rules become ridiculous and work against us, because you will find that the minimum or the maximum amount allowed for a particular official to rent, you don't find that in the market. And yet, you know, permission to hire on a higher level, even if it will be less than paying the hotel accommodation, is not given. So with this information, I've been tracking this issue, but let me get back to the regional commissioner to get the latest update and also the circumstances that lead to the continued accommodating of this person in the hotel. But
can you also find out how long is this person staying in that place?
Let me then undertake to come back and provide you with that information in writing, Chairperson. So yes, the subletting, I've addressed myself to the subletting, there are those kinds of abuses. The issue of increasing the budget in order to get our people to get better quarters, I'm not going to do that with really sorry for the reasons that I've explained. Not only that I won't do it, too, they just won't allow me to do it, they won't give me a cent for official accommodation. Some of the single rooms and some of the rooms that people have put up there, we need to, as we begin to work with CSIR, also insist on minimum accommodation standards that we will allow. Because you see, what people do is often do favors for people who seem to have personal problems, to accommodate them under circumstances that really we cannot be proud of. And once we have those standards, then we will make it impossible for someone to live in a room where he or she must walk naked from the shower to the bedroom. Or, you know, those things should not happen. But it's when people begin to take these initiatives to accommodate people that they get themselves tied up in these type of things. So what I'm, the undertaking I'm giving to the committee is that we are bringing to bear greater focus on the issue of managing our accommodation. There are serious challenges. There are some commitments that we have made, and there are others that Treasury and Public Works, because of the new legislation, will put added pressure on us. But when it comes to increasing our budget for this, it's something that unfortunately is not going to happen. I will ask Executive Secretary, Management Secretary, just to know that we do respond to you about the particular case that you have referred to.
Thanks. Mr. Shah, in first, Indy Chukunga, in Potipolo, and then you, Mr. Shah, because he has not asked a question. Indy?
Thank you, Sir President. I will also ask a question on pay again. Because the department is in this, in partnership with the external service provider, the facility, this care program. And I just want to know if all these external service providers have been quality assured, and also what is the impact of this partnership on the budget. My second question will be on the 2007-2008 strategic plan, which said the implementation of compulsory development of the program was to be piloted in 6 centers of excellence. One would surely be interested to know the results of the pilot project and at which centers were the programs piloted. And lastly, Chairperson, on the issue of corrections, I'm interested to know the number of custodial staff that will be trained in April 2008 with regards to the implementation of the ORP, and if this number is sufficient for the implementation of this ORP, and if indeed the process is on track for the rollout in October 2008. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Cindy. Mr. Shah is saying that he's leaving now because he's going to attend the defense meeting. He's also a soldier. Mr. Shah is also a soldier. Mr. Shah, no, that's fine. We'll get another chance to raise your question. Thank you very much for attending, Mr. Shah. Mposi, Golo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of implementation of the comprehensive offender skills development plan to enhance the skills, utilization and employability of offenders, how does the department or the government hope to enable the inmates when they are being reintegrated into the society to be able to stand on their own as a new business person from jail, from prison? Secondly, the increasing the number of offenders participating in formal education and other skills development programs as part of development will go a long way in addressing the issue of repeat offenders as raised in the 2008 State of the Nation Address. However, the small amount allocated to this program is a serious concern. How will the department realize the priority of government with such a small percentage increase? Third one, in trying to address Mr. Chairperson, the shortages of professional staff, in this case teachers and nurses, how will the department be able to attract and retain scarce skills with this budget? The last one, Chairperson. When chairperson of parole boards are being interviewed and being employed, we always want to know how they would interact with the public in terms of following the parolees. And I now want to find out from the department as to how does the department make use of the traditional leaders in order to keep the system of the reintegration of inmates back into the society. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks,
Nkosi.
Cindy?
Sorry, Chairperson, I forgot to ask this one. On the April 2008 program, if this matter of objective that says to ensure the personnel well-being of incarcerated persons by providing various needs-based services, 100% access to comprehensive HIV program and services for offenders. I am interested to know as to what does the statement mean. And I'm asking that question because I think on the ENE document, I think the department has stated that they are about 37 institutions or facilities that are providing comprehensive health care service in some way, just that the community can say. Now, I want to know as to how possible it is for the department to meet this objective. And also, Chairperson, under that very program, the department started discussing compliance with care policies, procedures, standards, and applicable legislation. And Chairperson, if practically you go to DCS, you find the staff, the custodian, sometimes they are medication, sometimes they should be patients. In fact, at night, most of them, they aren't necessary, yet they are patients who are supposed to get medication. for me that is in conflict with the lecture. Because health care services can only be provided by the professions according to their legislation prescribed by the country. Now, I just want to know as to how is the DCS going to ensure that it meets this very, whether it's a strategic objective or whatever that it has set for itself in the present situation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Meeting Grinya?
Chairperson, I'm still on the social integration. I want to finish my question, Chairperson.
Yes.
An audit of accreditation service providers who rider the integration program was to be conducted in 2007 and 2008. Was this conducted? If so, what are the results and how are these service providers? The second question, Chairperson, will be what step is the department taking to promote community-based sentence by the court? What step is it taking to improve community correction and to increase the trust in this sentencing option by the court? The third one, effective function of the parole board is important in terms of priorities identified in 2008 State of Nation Address to ensure effective implementation of the victim's charter. What steps have been taken by the board to increase victim representation at parole board hearing? And what are the cost implications of DCS? And is there a criteria in evaluation whether victims appear before the board? Then the last one, Chairperson, is the follow-up on the very same social integration. My question, Chairperson, was that in terms of the 2008 strategic plan, the department indicates the intention of the train 52 vice chairpersons and 12 newly appointed chairpersons of the parole board. Has this been achieved? I thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We'll take for the last question.
This very last one is a very minor one. The department claims that it intends to build and to upgrade facilities according to the policies of the department. The chairperson, I was in Ngoma the other last year, November. And when I went into the office of the head of center, interest general, he offered me the only seat in the office, and the rest of the members had to stand. I had to refuse occupying the seat, and I had to stand also, because it was the only chair in the office. If the department intends to improve these facilities, I would really ask them if they could get some information about the Nongoma office and please help that old man over there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nkosi. So, when you respond to the commission, you have budgeted for the staff of the Kimberley. We have budgeted.